the origin story. That's what's coming up on the Art of Bombing Episode 1 re-release.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a not-so-brand-new episode of The Art of Bombing. I'm Dan Bublitz Jr. I just wanted to jump in here with a little disclaimer before we get to the re-release of Episode 1. I just wanted to let everybody know this was recorded back in April of 2016 on a patio outside of a bar after an open mic in the outskirts of Olympia, Washington. So the audio quality obviously is not going to be that great, but the quality of the conversation was fantastic. Sam Miller was my guest. He's been in a couple episodes of the podcast since then. He's a great comedian based out of Olympia, Washington. But we had a great conversation. Going forward, I will probably cut the original intros out of the podcast, but for this one, I'm leaving the intro in because it gives the origin story of The Art of Bombing. I talked about what inspired me to do this podcast. I talked about what bombing on stage does to comedians mentally and emotionally. So I decided I'm going to leave that. So as soon as I'm done talking here, you're going to get another intro, and I do apologize for that. But like I said, I wanted to let it go so you could hear the origin stories of The Art of Bombing. A lot of people always ask me what inspired me to do this podcast. Well, I talk about that in this very first episode where I was joined by Sam Miller. So let's get into this episode one re-release. Enjoy. And if you like what you're listening to, make sure you like, subscribe, and maybe leave a 5-star rating and a review would be great. All right, so here we go. Episode one re-release with Sam Miller. Enjoy. Welcome to The Art of Bombing. I'm Dan Bublitz Jr. This is my podcast. This week on the show, I sit down and talk to Sam Miller about The Art of Bombing. That's right, this is a show about bombing, but not like blowing countries up, but bombing on stage. I am a stand-up comedian, and part of the process of being a comedian is to bomb on stage. It happens to all of us. Even the greatest comedians have stories about bombing on stage, whether it's just a joke that doesn't hit or a whole show that goes terrible. It's part of the process, and it's a scary part of the process. It's a feeling when you're on stage and you're not doing well. It is a very, very awful feeling. It just like overwhelms your whole body, and if you're doing a 5-minute set but you're bombing, it'll feel like an eternity. And when you get into where you're doing longer sets, it's even worse. This is the first episode. Obviously, that's why I'm kind of giving you an idea of what the podcast is about, you know, talking about bombing. And I thought it would be an interesting thing to talk about with other comedians and get their experiences and see what their takeaway is when they bomb, because you should learn something when you don't do well. Like, every show should be a learning experience, whether it's a good show or a bad show. You should take something away from it if you want to get better as a comedian. And I think at the end of the day, we all those that do comedy want to get better at comedy. So I'm sitting down with different comedians, all levels, from open micers to professionally touring comics, to talk about their experiences and see what they have to say on The Art of Bombing. This podcast is actually inspired by a bad show that I had. It was a private event where I bombed for like an hour, and I almost quit comedy afterwards, and you'll hear me talk a little bit about it, so I figure I better tell the story so you guys know what I'm talking about. But I did a show. It was a private event,
and I was booked to do an hour. Now, I could do an hour, but not a very good hour. I knew that going into it, but I figured I'd manage. That's how you get the time, by going into it. But I know I'm a decent feature, so I know my place. But I took the event because my aunt and uncle were on the planning committee, and they asked me to do it, so I said yes. Now, I was supposed to perform during a dinner. Then they decided when I got there they wanted to wait till after the dinner was over. And I thought, oh, that'd be good. Then they'll be done eating. They won't be distracted. But little did I know that there was an awards banquet going on during the dinner, or an awards ceremony, and it was going to last 3 hours long. So by the time I went up, the people had already been sitting for 3 hours, and they were getting tired and wanted to leave. But then, one of the last awards, well, first, let's go into this. So the event was hosted by two of the guys from the organizations, two older gentlemen. One of the older gentlemen was doing a bunch of Lena and Oli jokes, which are basically just internet jokes of Scandinavian humor, I believe, which is a big thing around the Midwest. They're big jokes that, they're funny jokes in the Midwest. People love that kind of humor out here. And of course, he tells these jokes throughout the night, and they're killing. People are laughing because people, they don't care. They just want to be amused. They don't care whether or not he wrote the joke or not. So he's doing well. They're having a great show. Now, before they bring me up, they have one final award to do. And the last award that they give out is the EMT of the Year Award, which is a fantastic award to give somebody. That's a great accomplishment. And, you know, and they should be awarded. Our EMTs and emergency medical services should be honored because they do a job that is scary, and they see a lot of sad things. So, you know, now, anyway, so they're giving away the EMT of the Year Award, which is a fantastic award. However, the gentleman that won this particular year's award had just died from cancer about 3 weeks prior after a long fight of cancer. So it was kind of a sad deal. They showed a video of them presenting him the award while he was still alive. So there was a lot of emotions going on. He had friends and families that were in the video. They were giving their testimonials about him. And the guy was like, he was just a pillar of his community. You know, he active member in the church. He helped with youth groups and helped with, I believe, Boy Scouts. He was a teacher, and he did the you know, volunteer ambulance and just all these amazing things. The dude was amazing and truly shouldn't have, you know, went out that way. It was kind of sad how that happens to good people, but that is life. So then the video gets over. There's a standing ovation. Then they present the award to his widow, who was sitting up front, another standing ovation. Then they close out the ceremony. They finish their last rites meal, where it's basically it's a ceremony where they have a place setting for the fallen. And then they do that, and they close out the show, and then they're ready for comedy. And the guy, one of the hosts, comes up, and he's like, whenever you're ready, you can just go up there. And I'm like, well, you're not going to bring me up. And he's like, oh, I guess I can. And he goes up, grabs the mic, and he's like, all right, guys, time for comedy. Here's your comedian. And I go up there, and I'm like, oh, great, this is going to be horrific. I already knew it. And one of the first mistakes I made was pointing out that this was going to be a long hour, because I was intimidated by that. The standing ovations and that sadness. And I was like, I didn't know how to, I was not equipped to deal with that. And I immediately went up and I was like, yep, this is going to be not so good. I don't know how you follow two standing ovations. I was like, well, how about another round of applause for that? Cause you know, he was pretty awesome dude. And then as I'm getting up and as I'm telling, you know, trying to get into my act, people are getting up and leaving. And I know it's not because of me, it's because they sat for 3 hours and they're tired. They want to go back to their hotel rooms or, you know, go have a drink or whatever. They need to get out of this room, and I don't blame them. And then there's people getting up and talking to the widow to send, you know, give their condolences and congratulate her and all this stuff. And that's right at the front of the room, but I can't say anything to them. I mean, that would be horrific. I'm already know that I'm not going to do well, and if I pick on them after that, heartfelt ceremony, I'm just going to be ran out of there before I even get done. So I do the hour. It doesn't go well. I just felt awful. Now, after the show, I'm sitting there waiting for my check, which I really didn't want to take. I felt so bad. I was like, oh, I don't even want to get paid. But I also have bills to pay, so I took the money. But as I'm sitting there, I'm waiting for the check to come, you know, kind of all sad and gloomy because I feel awful. One of the old guy that was doing the Lena and Lone Only jokes, the Lena and Only jokes, there we go, comes up to me and he says, keep at it, kid. You'll get there. And then walks off like he was the greatest comedian ever. Now, I held back because I didn't want, you know, I was just like, whatever, I'm not going to get into it because people don't know the difference. He doesn't know, have any idea what it's like to write his own joke and try to go up and entertain people because making a room full of strangers is really hard. Going up and not making a room full of strangers is even harder, at least on your psyche because it can really mess with you because, like, after the show, I wanted to quit comedy. And then I got to thinking about all the environmental factors that were in there. And it just wasn't set up to be a good show. Now, I'm not saying that I can blame all the whole hour bombing on that. I need to get better as a comedian. I should have been better well equipped to deal with the situation. So, yes, you need certain environmental things to make a show better. But you, as a performer, need to be better and get better to do well all the time. And that's where I'm at. And that's why I wanted to do this podcast, because I wanted to talk to other comedians and get their input and their insight on bombing and what they take away from it. So this first episode, like I said, I have Sam Miller on the show. He is a fantastic stand-up comic that lives in Olympia, Washington. He's a good buddy of mine. If you ever get a chance to see him, go see him. Super funny dude. But we sat down, we went to an open mic in Olympia on a Monday at South Bay Pub, and we did the open mic, and then after the show, after the open mic, we sat down, and I did a little interview. Now, I gotta say that I don't use a ton of real podcasting equipment. When I go out on the road, and I'm at talking to comedians, I just have my phone in interview mode, and we just sit there, I put it on the table in front of us, and we talk, so some of the audio might be rough, and I apologize for that, but that's part of the ambience, I guess, of what I'm doing here with this podcast. I did talk to some other comedians while I was in Olympia, so that'll probably be in the next episode. So the first two parts are actually kind of Olympia, Washington special, if you will. So without further ado, here is me and or Sam and I talking about the art of bombing.
I feel like any organization that I add to it is going to take away from, like, the spontaneity of it.
Yeah, you know? And take from the creativity, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I guess for me, I'm just trying to get more polished. Yeah. You know, like, it's...
I said that, and immediately I was like, wait a minute, I'm just fucking lazy.
Okay. But, you know, I am too. Like, I just now, it took me 7 years, and since I did this, like, I actually had to fill this in. While I was waiting for this to start, I was like, I haven't did this for like a month.
Yeah.
And I was,
you have to go back
and I was like looking through my recordings to see what dates and like I had listened and then to see like, where was this? I don't remember. Oh yeah. This was at this open mic in Aberdeen.
Yeah.
And shit like that. So
I mean, this deal's a trip. You know, I think about you coming over today and like, I mean, we know each other because we do comedy. And we met each other at that show a little bit.
Yeah.
But we don't really know each other. But also, we know each other pretty well because we're both trying to do this comedy deal, you know?
That's one of the coolest things, I think, about comedy is that that's just it. Like, I was thinking about that as I was coming here.
Yeah.
And, like, and especially after you're like, oh, stop by, you know? It's like, oh, that's so cool. Like, we met, like, one time.
Yep.
We've helped each other get some shows. But it's like that everywhere, too, with comedy. Like, you run into these people. And then you run into him on the road, especially when you start working the road. Like,
you see him more.
Yeah,
I think
you just randomly run into people, especially like in like bigger towns where they might be doing a whole nother show, and then all of a sudden you're all
there together. Yeah. I think about like how you get to come to Olympia. You know, most people they go to the Capitol Building or they go downtown and eat or whatever. And you got to hang out at my shitty house in Tumwater and then walk in a cul-de-sac and watch a weird dog kind of chase us. But it was a coward.
Very, very cowardly dog. It wasn't very, very scary German
No,
shepherd.
It almost slipped when I turned around to look at it. Like, you're like, a German shepherd?
No, it's like all, like, tripping over its own.
Yeah.
Practically wiped out.
Not a dog fan. I'm like dog neutral. People don't like that. Well, yeah.
So like that's the thing though with comedy. Like, so we're here at this open mic at, what is it, South Bay Pub?
I prefer to call it a pre-feature.
Pre-feature. Okay, we're at the pre-feature.
No, it's not.
No, it's kind of open mic.
I did get some extra time though. I throw my weight around here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Olympias here. Do you know about that? I got voted in Tacoma Volcano. They have a Best of Olympia issue, and I got voted Olympia's hero. I got a joke where I'm like, all I did was stop stealing people's bikes.
That's so funny. Like the big man of Olympia.
This looks bad. This looks so bad for Olympia.
Oh, no wonder everybody's nice to me. I'm running around with the big man on campus.
You made it, man. You made it.
I'm a made man. So we're at this open mic, and you had a really good set tonight.
Thank you.
You had a great set, especially having to work like right before you went up. This fucking dude comes in with a kid.
Yeah.
And we all know.
A karate kid.
Literally a karate kid. And I'm surprised nobody said anything about that because that's funny.
No, you don't want to. You don't want to.
Well, I know, kid. But.
Like, yeah, what's your deal? Oh, you're eight? That's stupid.
Oh,
that's stupid. You're going to kill yourself when you're 14.
And the dad probably would have been okay with it. He was all like, oh, the kid's good with it. But
you hanging out there, hanging out with your coward dad.
Training you to fight because he can't fight. What's going on there? You're going to be his bodyguard?
I'm your bodyguard.
But like with comedy though, that's a weird thing to like have to perform when there's kids around. Yeah. Like I can perform PG-13 and like whatever, it's not a big deal. But some people, like if a kid walks into the room, they're like, oh, I can't perform.
Crowd work. You know what's funny is that crowd work, I think it's less risky with kids than it is with adults in a way. Like I grew up on that. Like kids say the darndest things, you know. Like I worked them into that joke. There was one joke that I did about my kid eating that bag of popcorn that blew onto the playground.
Yeah.
And I knew that he knew. And, you know, it's a, because this happened. And then that's not a joke. I mean, it's a story. I added a little bit to it about which way the wind was blowing. But, like, you know, my kid ate a bag of popcorn that blew onto the playground.
Yeah.
And then he went to the nurse's office because it could be dangerous popcorn or something. I don't know what makes dangerous popcorn. But then they asked my kid, like, why'd you eat the popcorn? And then I asked this kid here, like, why do you think he ate the popcorn? And he's like, because popcorn's good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, exactly.
What was great, though, about that, like I said, like, when most comedians, you know, a kid walks in and they're done.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I can't even perform or whatever. But you not only were you, like, messing with him, but you, like, you were having a conversation with him.
Yeah.
And then you were able to work your jokes into that conversation. Because you did another story about your kids and everything, too.
Yeah.
But, so you had a good set tonight. But
That's not what we're here for.
Yeah. We're here to talk about the not-so-good sets. Yeah. Sometimes, you know.
Well, I told you about it. I'll tell the...
And, well, there were some guys tonight that didn't do so hot. You can definitely tell.
So nice.
Well,
it's all right. I don't know. It's fucking hard.
Because it's hard. I can relate though. Like, they didn't do so hot, and I'm not gonna be like, oh, they sucked a bag of dick. Because you know what? They maybe did suck, but we all suck at some time. Like, it's not, comedy's not easy.
No.
It's tough to go on stage.
Thank God, it's not easy.
But you can also tell like the age thing. A lot of these guys that are here are
young.
Yeah. And
they're new.
I could tell that, but I could also tell like you can tell that they're going to a liberal arts school.
Because they're
very theatric and sketchy with their performance.
They're more like
trying to do performance than comedy.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's the, you know, to me,
I can see that significantly.
Yeah. To me, comedy, you know, I want to take all the stuff that makes me uncomfortable. And I want to tell you why I'm going to be okay, maybe.
That's right.
You know, like, I, you know, maybe I shouldn't be a father. But, you know, whatever.
But I am, so take that, society.
Yeah.
So yeah, so well, let's get into it. Yeah, because earlier you were, when I was telling you about this idea about recording this, you know, podcast about, you know, bombing, you were telling me the story, and I was like, oh shit, I should have just recorded it. So,
well, here we are.
Here we are now. Okay. Now we're recording it. So let's.
Well, I live in Olympia, Washington, and I was attending the Evergreen. Actually, I don't know. I wasn't going to Evergreen then. I was working as a chemical dependency counselor, and it was a really hard job, and I was commuting. I was working at a methadone clinic, and I've been sober like 8 years, and I really loved parts of the job, but it wasn't working, and my life was really hard, and I just started doing comedy, and I realized that, hey, this is what I'm about, you know. I told you earlier that I feel guilty almost saying it, but, like, my first open mic, I did one joke, and it hit, and I was like, oh, that feels good, and the second joke that hit, I was like, oh, I'm a stand-up comedian. Like, that's yeah. What I am, you know.
That easy. Like, two jokes, and I'm done.
Yeah. And you know what? God damn it, I've been ever since, you know. Anyway, so I was like probably like 6 or 7 months in, and I had just started my show that probably, I started this show called Vomity in Olympia that was really popular and still is going. I handed it off to some folks. Yeah, I get an email. I did a piggyback improv show with an improv troupe in Olympia where I did a set and then the improv folks do improv based on a stand-up, and I did done real
yep,
well.
I've done that before.
And one of the guys in the improv troupe was like the athletics director at Evergreen, you know, and I thought he was the activities director, but he was the athletics director. Anyway, I get an email saying, hey, how would you like to do 15 minutes opening up for Gary Goleman at the Evergreen State College? And I'm like, fuck yeah, Gary Goleman, who, I'm not proud of this, but like, I don't watch a lot of stand-up, especially mainstream stand-up. Like, I see a lot of stand-up at shows, and there's certain shit that I like, but I just don't watch a lot of stand-up, you know. I see enough as it is. And actually, I liked really bad stand-up too. I like watching people bomb at open mics. Cracks me up.
I think that's common with all comics. Yeah, like, yeah. It's fun to watch one of our colleagues or
yeah.
one of our brothers go down.
Yeah.
Like, and instead of being like if we were in war, we'd be like, oh my god, we gotta help our brother. In comedy, we're like, ah, nice to be you.
Bye. People are still leaving the mic.
Yep, they are.
There's a lot of you in that car. If you die, it'll be extra tragic.
No, don't say that.
Sorry. Sorry. Yeah, when they crash. Every
yeah,
night.
Right, when they crash.
I'll see you tomorrow. We're actually recording a podcast right now. Anyway.
Yeah.
Like, we're recording a podcast.
Yeah, we're so
new America.
With my fancy equipment.
My dad built a church with his bare hands, and I'm recording a podcast. He made a bomb-proof building from memory.
With my cell phone.
Yeah. Nothing but a level.
Anyway, so...
Yeah, Gary Goleman, I was so excited. I got this email, and I said, great, Evergreen students. Because I wasn't, you know, I was doing 15, and I was like, you know, I wasn't super confident in my ability to do 15, and I wasn't really confident in my ability to do 10, really. I mean... Like, I had, like, a really good 5 minutes that I could do anywhere. And I was constantly working on new stuff. I was doing good, don't get me wrong. But, like, yeah, it was, I got really excited because I'm like, oh, this is Evergreen students, so I can just do a lot of my jokes are about drugs. I'm in recovery. I'm like, sweet, this is perfect. It turns out I didn't read the whole email. Like, it wasn't for Evergreen students. It was closing out an athletics award banquet for basketball coaches, basketball parents, and and I ate shit. I'll get into it, but I get there, and it's in a gymnasium, and the gymnasium is half full of these circular tables. They go all the way to, like, half court.
I feel like circular tables in comedy are terrible.
Yeah.
Like, anytime there's circular tables, it just seems like it's going to be bad.
It was awful. And then there's all these students that are there with their parents and their coaches and stuff, and they're sitting around the tables. All the different teams kind of had a table. And they finished the last award. It was, like, Coach of the Year or something, or a Lifetime Achievement Award. And, And then all the students left at once in a big group. And then it was I don't know, maybe like 50 people, but in like half a gymnasium, and like nobody was sitting that close to me. The whole room was just ridiculously bright. I mean, there was lights on me, but there's all like, I could see everybody just fine. And the capper was, is because this is a school, Evergreen, known for its like audio visual technical stuff. They had a 3-camera shoot, and beside and right behind me was about a 30-foot screen with my image projecting on it as I wandered out onto the stage and opened with a great joke about how I used to steal bicycles. And then talked about how birth control doesn't work. And there's nothing parents who just sent their kids off to a liberal arts college like to hear is about birth control failing and drugs. And God, I remember thinking, like I could usually tell, like I had a pretty good idea about like how time was passing for a minute, but it got to a point where like I sweat a lot. I'm out of shape and I sweat when I think, and comedy makes me think, you know, and it's kind of gross. I'm just like a sweaty fucker. But this was like, it was like a full body sweat. I remember feeling like my shins sweating.
Oh man. Well, like, you know, like that's one thing like people don't understand. Like when you're bombing, yeah. It is the worst feeling. Yeah. It's like when you're having a good set, like that's the thing with time on stage. When you're having a great set, it flies. Before you know it, you're like, really? Wow. I already did 10 minutes already? Yeah. What's going on here? You know, but if you're bombing, 3 minutes feels like a fucking eternity.
It was like coming in reverse.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe
it. Like semen had left my penis, and then somebody had caught it.
Just like jammed it.
And it was going into my system and freezing my veins. Like gumming me up on the inside. It felt so awful. And then the thing is that there's this giant screen behind me, and they keep switching between cameras, and I can see the red light in the which camera, so I'm like looking at these different cameras. And at one point, I know one side they're doing like close-ups. I see the camera switch. I look back at this giant screen, like my image projected on this screen, and I shit you not, a fucking bead of sweat appeared on my face and like rolled down, and I sort of, it was like the camera was like following it as it rolled down my face, and like it was this, it was like the size of a dinner plate on this giant fucking screen. And that is the only laugh I got, is I looked out at the crowd that was like, God, this must be hard to watch me sweat like this, and everybody's like nodding, and I'm like, just imagine how it feels. Which is exactly what I was feeling at that moment. And what's weird is that, like, Gary Goldman, you know, I see him, and like I think I said hey to him like in the back, you know, and like I hope he hears this, by the way. If once you post this, I'll try to get him to listen to it. I like, you know, I hear it. I see him in the back, and he taps the guy who booked me on the show on the shoulder. He's like, taps him, you know? And then all of a sudden he waves his finger in the air above his head with that, like, and it wasn't just like, he didn't look like panicked. He was just like this, like, you know, it's like, this is a disaster. It's like, I feel like, you know how you feel when you like see like a really drunk driver and you're like, oh, I gotta do something.
Yeah.
You know, like this guy's going to kill somebody. And that's, it's kind of, and I remember I put the mic back, and it was weird because like my mom was there, like she was really excited, and it was really cool because I got to show her like my green room, you know, and like I knew that I was, that feeling, you know, it's like and it, immediately when I left the stage, like for a minute, I was like almost blocked it out, like immediately. It was almost like, oh, that wasn't like that bad, you know, because there was like 2 or 3 people that came out to see me specifically, and they kind of liked my shit jokes that I had, and like it was just, and but like I finally came around to it, and like it took me like a little while to be like, oh man, like that was really awful. Like then it's like, oh yeah, like you bombed, like that's what happened, is like you bombed. Like I had open mic sets that didn't go my way, you know, but like that was it. Like they hated me. Like, they really didn't like me. And, like, And that's the shit that kills me with comedy. It's like, when you eat shit at comedy, because, like, I'm not up there. Like, this isn't a fucking act. Like, I'm not up there being like, wouldn't that be crazy if I did meth and then I did this and this and this? It's like, I fucking did meth and I did that and that and that. You know?
Like, this is my life.
Like, this is me. This is me telling you that it's okay to like me. And they're like, no, we don't. Yeah.
How long? So, okay, so you bomb. You've accepted now that you've bombed. How long, like, when you have a bad set like that, like, does it take you to shake it?
Because
for me, like, an open mic, like, I can, like, bomb at an open mic. And I wouldn't even necessarily call it bombing. I guess I just, you know, not doing well.
It's hard to say, like, some shows
I get done, and I'm like, oh, I'm done. Yeah. Well, yeah, like, the show that I was telling you about that I did that actually inspired this, and I'm not going to get into it now because I'll probably do it as its own episode kind of thing, but that was when I felt like I bombed. Like, bad.
Because you could have done well.
Exactly.
But I didn't.
But I bombed. That's exactly what I couldn't have done well, but I didn't. And because of it, like, and usually, like I said, if I don't do well in an open mic, it's no big deal. I just, like, I shake it off. Like, I'm getting the car and I go to the next mic. Yeah. But that one, like, I literally wanted to, like, I was ready to quit. I was like, yeah, I'm not supposed to do comedy. I'm not funny. I'm not, all this stuff, you know? And it took me a little while to shake that feeling.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, for you, how long did it take, you know, before you could?
Until I got back on stage. I think I went back up. I think I either went up the next day or the day after. Because this is the thing, too, is I live in Olympia, Washington. And, like I had to, like, basically I started an open mic because there was, like, I got so tired of driving to Seattle all the time to do, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was the weirdest thing, man. In a way, it got worse because I just kept, like, as time over the next, like, there was that night. And I went home and I told my wife what happened, and it's like she doesn't understand, you know, like what happened, you know. It's like, you know.
And I suppose she tries to be supportive. Yeah. She's like, "Oh, it wasn't that bad." Yeah.
It was like when Junior Seau died, and I told my wife, I'm like, "This is fucked up that this dude did this. Like, he was one of, like, my favorite football players." And she doesn't know. She likes the Seahawks a little bit, but she has no idea, like, what Seau means to, like, a guy like me. You know what I mean? It's like talking, it's like you're in, like, another, you know, it's like, the weird thing about it is it, like, it's like it hits and it hurts that first. It's like this physical reaction. And then over the next, like, I woke up in the morning and it was like the first thing that popped into my head is like, "You ate shit last night, you fucker." And it was weird but by then I could, like, recall, like, more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like,
now you're analyzing.
Yeah. And, like, I'm thinking about, like, "Oh, I said this and this." And then I was like, "And then I said this and this. And then I said this and this." And that didn't work either. But by the time that I've said the third this and this, like, the first this and this is still there. And I'm just building this fucking pyramid of shit in my head about this.
Pyramid of this and this.
Yeah. I'm like, "I said this and this, this and this and this." And that's like the foundation of "I'm awful at comedy." And then there's, like, the next level. And I'm like, "Oh, yeah." And then I went this and this and this. And then I tried to do that crowd work. And that guy crossed his arms and shook his head at me, you know. It's like this. And then that happened. And then that happened. And then it's like, and then the flag on the top is Gary Goldman, like, spinning his finger in the air, like, "Get this fucker out of here," you know?
Oh, and that reminds me, the you said the flag of him spinning. So I was telling you the story about, you know, my story.
Yeah.
And I told you about the old guy that was hosting the award ceremony.
Yeah.
After I get done, I'm waiting for my check, which I told you, I felt like I shouldn't have even taken, but I'm sitting there waiting for them to come pay me. Yeah. This old man comes up to me and he's like, "You'll get it, kid. Keep at it."
He was the one who was doing the, Sven and
Ole jokes.
Yeah, the Sven and Ole jokes.
He comes up and he's like, "Keep at it, kid. You'll get there."
Yeah.
And I was just like, "Oh my God."
The thing about it, though, is it, like, I'm going to be okay. And that's what's amazing and, like, and beautiful about comedy is that, like, we made it happen. Like, that's the thing is to bomb, I guess, in a way you have to do well if you're, like, a decent comedian, you know, like, that means that you've created a contrast. Like, anything that's better than that is that much better because of that.
Well, yeah, that totally makes sense.
I'm uh I have not done that poorly since then. I've had some sets where, like, and it's weird because I've probably bombed, like, probably like two or three other times, but, like, I don't even call it a bomb because it wasn't opening for Gary Goldman for Basketball Coaches at Evergreen.
Yeah, right.
You know, like,
it wasn't the same situation.
And it was weird because watching Gary Goldman is it like he did good, you know?
Yeah. So what? Okay. So now that you, and I think that's one thing that separates good comedians from bad comedians is being able to be self-aware and being able to be like, okay, I suck. Because there's some people I've seen plenty of comics go up and just eat shit and then come off stage and be like, oh, I just killed. That was the greatest set ever. And I'm like, you know, I'm like looking around.
I like
thinking,
when I see
did
somebody
you not,
eat shit.
Did you not
room.
See the same thing I did?
Because
nobody's laughing at you. You're so delusional. But, you know, and I think, like I said, like with a good comedian, they're not afraid to be like, okay, I totally bombed and I need to do better.
You know, so, I say that. See, that's the thing is, like, I knew I was like, man, I need to get back on stage, like, quick just because, like, it'll make me stop thinking about this and I'll get my ego a boost, you know? And, you know, like, and I was going to tell you this earlier, you know, it was like, this is a deal where at least the way I see it, the people that are doing well aren't necessarily the most well put together, like, brains around, you know, like I have, like I dealt with addiction and I have, like, you know, I have some undiagnosed, like, PTSD shit from being locked up. And I have anxiety, you know.
Well, and that's something, you know, by listening to some other podcasts and stuff, I was listening to WTF pretty much my whole trip out here. And I was getting caught up, and, you know, Mark Maron talks about, you know, kind of, you know, trying to be open and everything, and some other comics that were on there we're talking about their problems and anxiety and just different issues with life. And I think that's something that a lot of comedians share anyway, is like, we're all kind of torn. Like, we're not all right. Otherwise we wouldn't be doing it. You know? But so what's your takeaway from this, from bombing? What was your takeaway?
But I love comedy, or else I wouldn't have done it again. You know, like that's what I take away, is that, like, if you can do that and feel that bad and then do it, then you must be, like, fucking made for it. Unless you're one of those weirdos you were just talking about that just eats shit at shows all the time. I seen cats, you know, they do the, anyway, that's what I take away, is that, And, you know, in a lot of ways, and this is the way I look at a lot of stuff, is that, like, I was a drug addict for all those years, and, like, and then I was in recovery, and I met people in recovery, and, like, these groups and stuff. Like, I met people in these recovery groups, and they go back out, and they start drinking or doing drugs again, and, like, all these people I know and love and trust, and just, like, and I'm a part of their lives, and they're a part of my lives, and they fucking die a lot. They die a lot, and I've had to deal with a lot of grief. I've had friends commit suicide. Like, in the past 3 years, I've had friends commit suicide. I have a friend get murdered in the bar that I was working at. Like, I mean, I've had, like, all this shit goes down, but, like, what you realize is that, like, there's a lot of beauty in grief, you know, and there's, you know, this idea that the world is going to keep going, and that there's beautiful, amazing things happening all the time. And in a weird way, if you think about it, and it doesn't work for everybody, and I'm not trying to tell anybody this feel good bullshit nonsense, but, like, I feel really selfish when I'm miserable a lot of times. That, like, in a world that's as in, you know, if I was to die tomorrow, like, I get to live in this beautiful world where I get to, you know, have people I barely know from San Diego come and stop by my house and look at the fucking woods and talk about, you know, eating shit on stage, and I don't have to, you know, I'm a happy guy. I'm 51% okay. And fucking okay is a pretty big deal for me.
That's amazing. That's beautiful.
That's all I am.
That's great.
And also, I don't really care because I'm never going to bomb again.
Oh, man. That's a great place to end. I love it. That
That was Sam and I talking about The Art of Bombing. I thought it was a fantastic story that he had and a beautiful takeaway. The whole thing about how much he loved stand-up comedy was his takeaway. And I feel like that's true with a lot of comics, that we really love what we do, otherwise we wouldn't do it. I mean, because, you know, obviously there's narcissistic tendencies in it, but it's also one of them things where love makes you crazy, right? When you're in love with somebody, you do things that you wouldn't necessarily do, but you do it for love. And that's the same thing with comedy, like go and stand in front of a room full of strangers and bomb. And then when you think, oh, I should probably not do this anymore, what do? Instead, you go do it again the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, until you get better and better and better and better, and you're one of the greatest comedians of all time. I want to thank you guys for listening to this episode, The Art of Bombing. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Bublitz Jr. if you want to leave comments and questions or so on and so forth on the episode. Go ahead and tweet at me at Dan Bublitz Jr. Otherwise, you can go to my website as well, danbublitz.com. In next week's episode, I sit down with a couple of comedians from Olympia, Chase Broper and Nicole Bailey, who I did their show, Vomity. And if you're in Washington on a Tuesday, no, sorry, Wednesday, can't get that right. If you're in Olympia, Washington on a Wednesday, go check out Vomity at LaFleur. It is a great, fantastic room. And anyway, we'll talk more about that on the next week's episode. Once again, thanks for listening and have a great week.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production. Hosted and produced by Dan Bublitz Jr., The Art of Bombing intro music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music used in this podcast was under the Creative Commons license. If you would like to help The Art of Bombing, you can do so by subscribing, rating, and reviewing our show on whatever podcast application you use to listen to The Art of Bombing. For previous episodes, blogs, and more, visit artofbombingpod.com. Have a great week, and remember, stay safe so you can live to love.